We've got Samantha DeBendard, at Chatham House Associate Fellow. And Samantha, it's great to talk to you today. There's a lot of investors, I think, who are sort of catching up on the news that played out over the last 24 hours, 48 hours. Talk to me about what specifically has shifted as a result of what we've heard from President Putin and his actions.
Well, what has shifted is that President Putin has now started to be transparent about his ambitions on Ukraine. In 2014, when he annexed Crimea and when he supported the separatists in the Donbass, he had already invaded the country, but he was not really admitting it. He said the annexation was the result of a referendum, and he denied having Russian troops on the ground in the Donbass. Now he's gone beyond pretending. He said yesterday in a meeting to the Russian Security Council and later on in an address to the Russian people in a televised address, he said that he considers Ukraine's independence and Ukraine's statehood to be a fabrication, that Ukraine was an invention of the Bolsheviks. And what he is saying here sounds very much like the kind of things that Hitler was saying back in the 1930s about the countries that had a right to exist or not. This is a sharp shift in Putin's rhetoric. He has stopped hiding behind the facade of proxy invasion. What he's done now by sending what he's calling peacekeeping troops in Ukraine, he's still pretending this is not a total invasion. And a very worrying development for me as a European, I'm British, but I do consider myself to be European as well. Josep Borrell, the European Foreign Affairs Commissioner, said that it is not a total invasion. It is an invasion. Ukraine is a sovereign country. What is worrying, though, Putin has picked up on things that President Zelensky said in Munich on Saturday. And President Zelensky alluded to agreements that Ukraine made in 1994 to renounce its nuclear weapons in exchange for security guarantees. Zelensky alluded to the fact that maybe Ukraine would not be bound by those guarantees anymore. Now, Ukraine is not going to have a bomb tomorrow. It does not have the capability today. But Putin has latched on that phrase. And he said, both in his Security Council meeting and in his address to the nation, that he believes that Ukraine is developing a nuclear capability. The way analysts are interpreting this is that he might use this as an excuse to take out infrastructure in Ukraine that he will falsely claim are developing a nuclear capability. This is a sharp uptake in the rhetoric. And I've been studying Russia and Ukraine for the past 30 years. And this is the first time that I'm really pessimistic as to where Putin will stop. And I personally don't think he's going to stop in the Donbass, something which, as myself have an investment portfolio, is something I'm looking at with horror. But I am very concerned indeed.
Samantha, Brian Chung here, obviously, in the humanitarian aspect of this can't be discounted at all. But within the context of what was announced by the Russian president, we need to, I guess, clarify the difference between recognizing what they see as separatist movements in those regions that you highlighted, and then Kyiv, the capital itself. And I think that there is kind of the open question about whether or not what Putin suggested yesterday is also a suggestion that they want to, at some point, get into the capital as well. Now, the United States calling this an invasion, ordering embassy staff to evacuate the capital. Do you see the announcement from Russia as also heightening the odds that they would want to wage an attack on the capital as well?
He certainly seems to be preparing his population for that eventuality. The way the Russians work is they put their chess pieces in place and they start creating alternative realities. Now, Putin has been creating an alternative reality around what is going on in Ukraine for the past 8 years. And he's now augmented his alternative reality to a very different level. So I've been an optimist for most of the past few weeks, and I've actually been dismissing some of the claims coming from the US and from my own government in the UK that Putin intends to take Kyiv. I'm now actually feeling that these claims might have a lot more truth to them because of the way Putin is talking. What is also interesting to note is how his Security Council is behaving towards him. They all seem absolutely terrified. We had the image of Putin's foreign intelligence chief stuttering when he was being asked questions by Putin speaking to him in the way you would talk to a naughty child at school and asking him to repeat things until he gave the right answer and then dismissing him like you dismiss a child. This is a man who seems to have lost contact with reality. We joke in the think tank community about Vlad the Mad. It was a joke up until now. Now it's sounding a little bit more ominous. Mm. And when people lose touch with reality, that is when you start to get worried.
Yeah, Samantha, you know, throughout the diplomatic process, the U.S. and NATO allies have maintained that sanctions are a deterrent. Now that Russia has actually invaded these two separatist enclaves, how much leverage is there with those sanctions, and really how effective are they likely to be in deterring President Putin from going further into Ukraine?
Well, quite frankly, the sanctions that were announced yesterday seem really insufficient. The sanctions that were announced by President Biden, that no investment into the separatist republics. I mean, no one in their right mind would want to invest in the separatist republics. It's like saying, let's go invest in North Korea. And I'm hoping that the sanctions that are going to be announced later today will be more far-reaching. Sanctions, of course, have limited impact, particularly in a regime which has been slowly turning towards China, both for new markets and for new sources of imports. But far-reaching sanctions which would really hit Russia's access to capital markets, Russia's access to sovereign debt, would certainly have more of a reach. What would be interesting to think about would be sanctions which would touch the second tier of his circle sufficiently for enough people in Russia, enough people in senior positions to feel the time has come. This man is ruining our country. He's ruining our lives to begin with, because we can't enjoy our money. And he's ruining our country. And I think if one is to think of sanctions, and if one is a policymaker, it would be important to think of the kind of sanctions that would weaken the regime enough to see some kind of change, bearing in mind that the problem in Russia is not just Putin, it is the lack of democratic institutions. But sanctions are the only tool we really have. We cannot imagine going to war with Russia. Russia is a nuclear power. And when your ambassador to the UN said that Putin seems to be wanting to go back in history, the thing is, we can try and behave like we did behave in 1919, but we have nuclear weapons today. This is not 1919, this is 2022. Big difference.
And finally, Samantha, I wonder if we can speak to some of the cracks, if you can call it, among NATO members. I mean, obviously, we've seen Germany respond today, but you've got other countries like Italy, for example, saying over the weekend at the Munich Security Conference that the sanctions should be more narrow in scope and should not include energy. You've got those like Turkey who are coming out and saying that, you know, not necessarily committing to sanctions, obviously, because of the exposure they have to Russia. Are those divisions, you think, big enough to divide this NATO alliance, the longer this carries on, or are we making too much of that?
There are divisions. There are divisions for the exact reasons that you have mentioned. There are also divisions because many senior politicians in Europe have financial interest in Russia. You have a former presidential candidate in France who is on the board of a Russian energy company. You have the former Austrian finance minister who's also on the board of a Russian energy company, the former German chancellor who's on the board of Nord Stream. So there are a lot of conflicts of interest within the European Union. Within NATO, you have conflicts of interest, even in the UK, where you have a lot of Russian money that has gone to financing the ruling Conservative Party. NATO has been disunited in the past. I think the fact that America is back is making a big difference. What I'm seeing, and I used to actually work at NATO headquarters, I was a political officer at NATO responsible for relations with Ukraine, so I'm quite plugged into what's happening there now. We are seeing more unity, that this crisis is really opening even the most skeptical people's eyes to the reality of who Putin is. I live in France. France has been traditionally relatively pro-Russian. And the fact that the French government is now taking, first of all, a leading role in brokering talks between Putin and Biden, but also coming out with a lot stronger rhetoric than it has been in the past, I personally feel is showing a positive step towards more unity in the alliance.